And he's next door.
Right.
That guy knows where to put the horse, but that's what I would do, and I do that quite a bit on some of these horses, especially maidens that are running around here, maybe getting beat. And I'll just kind of wait for them to drop into a maiden planning horse. And you can do that, you got all the tools to do that. But you can do that with your own stable. I mean, you can take some 12-5 horse, for example, run his last 3-4-5 races even. Get a feel for where that horse really belongs. Not a 12-5, because it can't go much lower. Take a 20, for example. Run his last 4-5-6 races even. Get a feel for what the kind of numbers that that horse normally throws, right? Then you know where that horse belongs. Wait for him to get there. A lot of ways you can play with this, and a lot of things you can do with it. The Burr Moment being an excellent example right now, because his race belonged in the stakes category.
In your notes, just follow that procedure. Let's say this was 20, they dropped you to 60, the pace slowed down, you won. Kept him at 16, he placed. Thought he was real great, now he goes up to 24. These pretty well dictate, kind of indicate to you that the class was a little higher. Didn't do very well there, so it goes back to 20. That didn't quite make it, go to 16, then 20, 24. You see over this column, where suddenly, if up here somewhere, he starts clicking at 20 and 20 and 20, and then you say, okay, if they're going to step him up to 24, as Tom described it, if he's running at 24 class level energy, total energy, and the pace today is one that he's been able to overcome, then you can bet him to 24. This probably represents if you would correlate it over here, probably indicating the fact that he's the class he's going to get. Yes, sir.
A lot of times you get a horse that has a lousy trainer and he drops down in the claiming ranks and some good trainer claims him and suddenly, bang, it's like night and day. I mean, is the trainer that good or is the horse that good and he's just mishandled?
There you go. There used to be something, maybe not on this past performance, you might have to go back to some back racing forms. But generally you'll find somewhere where the horse was that good before. Unless it's a young horse and the guy just figures out how he can help the horse. But if it's an older horse, you'll find somewhere in his past performances where he's been there before from. And it is, I mean, there is such thing as good trainers. Yeah. I mean, I'm not one to deny that. I pay attention. There are certain trainers that I will not play, period. I don't care what. I mean, you know, once in a while I throw a good number, but they never repeat them. But not many. Most of the time I don't know what weight they're carrying. And if the trainer, unless the trainer is one of those few bad ones that I won't play, I don't really care who's training them, although I'll upgrade some that guys like Gary Dillon's training. But I won't throw them out.
If Hollendorfer claims something, you got to watch it.
Yes, you do. But they know, they'll look at a horse and they figure out how they can help the horse. And by figuring that if they claim it, they got to run it at a level higher, right?
Yeah.
So they'll claim it, run it at a level higher, and those guys win back.
Yeah, there's a horse of Bright's Advice, I think it is. A guy claimed that for $10,000. Done amazing things.
Yes, he's a decent trainer. His name is James Mascari.
Yeah,
he's the one that also trains the $122 worth the other day. Ash.
Ash.
It's from Caliente.
You're talking about the stability of the trainer.
The best trainer.
You might find out that the stability has a lot to do. So his ability to enter the horse in a field, the horse can handle the pace. Now they don't get those conditions much of time to know exactly what the pace is, but they have a pretty good idea who's on the ground and how it's shaping up for that race they're entering in. And your better trainers think pretty much like you do. My horse can't handle that early speed horses, whatever they call them, whatever their terminology might be. They can't handle the speed in this race. I'll just send him in for exercise or whatever, and the one who wants to win with it will try to find what they call, I think, in parlance of racing, a soft spot. Well, a soft spot is not generally speaking of how, but the final time is, and a spot is which the horse can either overcome or dominate the pace. And there's your key, by class, to a horse developing your own stable. I would really recommend, this is something I think you would do real well with. You could concentrate on a few animals. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you what this will do for you, just exactly what Tom's exercise will do for you. Pretty soon you won't have to keep a stable. All these little factors that we're looking at here, which are the essence of the matchup, will now become automatic for you. And you will be able to handicap any card of races and be able to look at any horse as if you owned him and whether he belongs in the race or not. This exercise with just a few horses will train your mind and key your mind to that matchup, to where they belong, what level they belong, and what pace matchup they belong in, much more readily than trying to do it by doing every card race on the card.
Well, there was a horse a few weeks ago, Tom might remember, called Savoir Faire.
Sure.
He was claimed, I don't remember exactly the claim price, 24, something like that. The next race, he put him in a $34,000 announcer. It's not because he could win him, the way I looked at it, but because I figured the guy was wanting to give him some work, and then he came back and boom, won like
That's on. Then he caught a money track when he next started. Yeah, that's what they did.
Yeah.
It was Julio Canandi, who's a very good trainer. He played full time, ran him over his head, then dropped
him. The point of the matter is that trainers use this type of material more effectively than bet horses. The people who use the sheets the most effectively in the East Coast are the trainers. Owners. That's where Rogozin gained his reputation. Since the brown sheets are essentially the same, supposedly, and most of the endorsements you see are from owners and trainers, it would behoove you to make your pace sheets and become the owner, the trainer, and only bet on your horse when it's properly placed. Just say, I didn't place him there today. The owner made me do it. You're the trainer. Well, if you want to be the owner, say, I didn't place him there. The trainer made me do it. But you're going to be the one, and you have more information. We have a couple of these trainers that you mentioned around here who don't use the method to bet with. They use this very thing, the pace of the race, pace of the horse, for placing of their horses. And they look at the pace that they think that the horse race is going to be run today, and they look at their own horse's pace, history, and they say, hey, he doesn't belong in this. He's going to get murdered on the turn. He won't make it to the second call with this bunch. Or this is an ideal spot. Or he can close against this or whatever term they use.
I hope by now you all have an intellectual problem with the statements by Brown and Rogozin that face me with nothing.
You
know, one of the examples that we use once in a while is Busy Boy, right? But he was sharp. As long as he could get the lead, it was quick enough to get the lead in the race, he ran enormous numbers. And when he couldn't get the lead, he ran dismal numbers. I mean, that's just one example. I'm not just picking that out of that, but you see it all the time in this methodology. Horses incapable of getting that early pace do not throw big final time numbers. That's the problem I have with that. I think it's just fundamentally unsolid.
Unsound.
It's not fundamentally solid.
Well, you know, you got another one called Cold and Hard. Has never passed a racehorse in his life.
Yeah, there are a lot of them. That's right.
I mean, he's won races, but he has never, next any running line you look, that horse has never passed a horse.
Well, all of you are showing very great insights into pace. Now, there's a formula for using it. For those who are having too much problem in handicapping a card every day and trying to worry about your job or your business or something, you can get your own stable to start with. Handle as few or many horses as you can handle. I don't know a lot about racing or handicapping per se, but I know what wins races and how to latch on to what wins races. And I would prefer to trust me as the trainer or the owner than the one who's doing it, and just bet on the horse when he's doing what I would do. That makes him a great trainer. You'll find a lot of great trainers on your trainers to watch list if you only make your wages when they're doing what you know is right. You've all got that concept. I hope that you use that in conjunction with your horses to watch, because now you'll be able to pin down races where you won't have this thing when you look at your readouts. How should I evaluate this? He's second W, but he's third early and he's fourth later. This, you know, you won't say, make this mistake of interpretation. Now you know when your horse is ready. And that pride of ownership will do a lot for your confidence in business. The other thing before we turn it over to Dick is to make use of the dreamers. How many of you have either ultrasound or contender skin.
Synergism
or contender skin. Okay, that's virtually every one of you has a dream race set up.
The dream race is built on of the. You might have six or seven or eight contenders. Who knows? Somewhere in that race, it will highlight up here the horse that owns in that race, composed of just the numbers that you've entered into that race itself, the horse with the best first, the best second, and the best third fraction. This one might be down here, might be several horses ahead of it, might be here. This one might be down here somewhere. This one might be up here, might be somewhere down here, who knows. Somewhere out of that race has been created for you the dream race, which are the best three possible fractions that can be run in today's race. It's a dream race because almost never will the dream race actually be run, but the potential that each horse must face. This horse who runs the 60 must eventually face the potential that he's being pressed up to 790. And they both must worry about the potential of a horse that can run a 53.90 third fraction. The race is shaped, the matchup develops, and the energy that flows therefrom is based on those three fractions of the dream race. We had yesterday a statistician among us who said that the three horses in the dream race were in the money some 78% of the time, and the winner came out of the dream race 60% of the time. When one horse owns two segments of the dream race, we have found it's almost a lock, unless he completely goes to pot in the third fraction. He might be the 60, he might be the 57.80, but he might then be the 49.40, and then you worry a little bit. Generally speaking, when he has an acceptable third fraction, a fraction that fits within the parameters of what wins at the distance, owning two of them is as close as you're going to get to a lot. But out of the dream race comes what you have to watch. In fact, you just underline the dream race fractions and base every other horse's performance on the three dream race fractions. You'll have a much better way to analyze how that race is going to turn out. And the class that did it here before was sitting before us for years in the face of the race program. You could have put in a dream race or anything you wanted, but it was sitting in front of us. But when they saw it on paper, they went home and started analyzing it and found out that it improved their handicapping just a whole lot to be able to analyze the dream race. This is how it's going to be run in the first fraction. How are all the other horses going to relate to it? This is that second fraction, that hidden fraction, that turn time fraction. How are the other horses handling the turn? And if this is the fastest that anybody can come home, how fast are the early horses in relationship to what they must face as a challenge coming home?
Doc, how would you specifically, as you commented before, use the dream race to separate factor W ties and synergism?
Oh, fine. I'm glad you said that. Synergism will give you a factor W based not on what we remember as factor W, which is early pace and sustained pace. It will give you factor W, which is a total of 1 plus 2 plus 3, I believe, in the sprints, and second call twice plus third fraction average in the route.
So it's traditional factor W in the route, and
I hope it is.
Early times 2 plus third fraction divided.
Pretty worried. Is that the variant program?
Yeah. No, he used the same formula in the variant program and in synergism. He used the variant program's sprint formula in the.
You mean in computing factor W?
Yeah, in computing factor W.
Okay, he uses 1 plus 2 plus 3 in sprints and early pace plus sustained pace.
No, not 1 plus 2. It's early times 2. Plus third divided by 3.
Same thing. It's the same thing. come within about 0.02.
Okay. All right. Whatever that is, Dave. That's the formula is not universally early plus sustained. No. Back to W in synergy.
It is on every other phase two program, but not in synergy.
So what you have is a situation where factor W is tied. Synergy is more often than it would be in any other program if we're using the old factor W formula. So these two horses, you have two horses who are tied for factor W. The first thing you can go and do and look is at the actual numbers to break the tie. If you print out the actual numbers, you find there's not really a tie except in very rare cases. But since it is using essentially 1 plus 2 plus 3 in the sprints, or it is compounding second call, as Dick's version of the formula is in sprints, you're going to find that it emphasizes the second call more than it does the second fraction. So then what you want to do to break your factor W tie is to then take the sum total of 1 plus 2 plus 3. You come up with something like 171.19. Take the formula all the way across using second fraction instead of second call. Take first, second, and third fraction. And you'll find that this one might be 170.84, and another one might be 170.21. So utilize where it fails to do as good a job as it might, and it does a marvelous job. Look at that spritz back there. I mean, it's doing for people who never could win before, no matter what they tried. It is winning for them if they play in volume. It's winning for them like they never won before because they're playing in volume and they're not isolating a given race. They're saying, give me 20 races and I get 13. But if you want to separate your factor W's, just add them across when you get that dream race. Add the horse's fraction and get a total. That's what you have upstairs. But always when you're playing, before you play synergism, look to see that the horse didn't dive badly in that second fraction. That will separate the men W's from the boy W's. Really. Isn't that key?
It is.
It's key. That's the beauty of the synergism, where it might give you a gross readout, which plays you can win in volume with, by just analyzing the dream race, you can separate the good factor W's from the ones that are weak.
And this, some of the totals works, I mean, in terms of this, would just as applicable for sprints as for runs.
Oh, sure. The hidden fraction is dominant in both. Well, why did Scott make the second fraction in routes his ability time?
Right.
It was an accident, but an accident of genius. And he didn't even know why it was so good, but it is far more effective to use the second fraction as ability time in routes, and it is the third fraction as ability time in sprint.
It's also a good indication of a horse that's really improving. When they record that big second fraction in a route. Anybody happen to see Rakaposhi win last week?
Yeah.
Realizes that that horse had a 57 something second fraction in a route.
56.76.
Okay. Huge second fraction in a route.
So whereas factor W, the factor W readout you get would express early and excuse a weakening second fraction, because it's still the second call is real good based on this early. A stronger factor of it would be a horse that was a little bit behind here, but gained in that second fraction. That's your strongest, that's the strongest horse in the race, no matter whether you use the matchup on the dream race or whether you use compounded fraction. The strongest indication of a winner is a horse that is not lagging very far behind here, but it moves on the pace in the second fraction and continues to move to the end. The weakest is the horse that runs it all here and starts a decline here. That horse still wins if this is appreciably higher than the next best horse on a very early biased track. But softening the tracks, when you see something like 60, 57, he's 57, 80, and this one now becomes 57, 90, he's 59, 60 over here, and then this one is the 49, 90 horse, and this one is 51, 40. He can overcome this quite readily because he started overtaking the base of the race right now. That's what you would call an early crester. The only time that an early horse, just the early horse, was just early by itself, with nothing else but shoulders, when there's extreme early bias and when a properly made model shows that it doesn't matter what it does. But the marvelous thing about it, if you keep a model on your dream race, on your second fraction as well, is that it will correct these errors we sometimes have in the analysis of early and sustained pace. There's where sustained or press pace begins, in that second fraction. One thing I promise, before I turn it over to Dick.
We gotta wake him up first.
One thing I promise, when you're doing that stable method, and when you're analyzing the horse's ability to run against the second call, if you're where you are at Santa Anita Hollywood Park, if you're in Southern California, be always aware of the fact that a horse who runs 45-1, I'm just giving ballpark here, we're going to run 44-4 here, and it's not a big deal. Don't say, oh boy, because it's not a big deal. These 44-4s and 7 furlongs and 6.5, you look and see what they did at 6. Don't think that they're runaway early horses, because this is common. It's just as common at Fairplex to run a 21-3, and if you get all excited about that when it goes to Santa Anita, it's going to run a 22-1 when it gets to Santa Anita. All you have to do is take a list of those figures and see what they run when they run at 6. And this is an anomaly only because of that longer straightaway.
Of course you can't. 45-1 horse just automatically runs about, what, 44-4?
Sometimes they take hold of it.
Doc, yeah. In regards to that, about twice a year you'll see this, and it always pays a huge mutual, is the horse that folds, well, Pine Tree Lane was an example off the bias, but the horse that folds up at 6 furlongs, and he's entered at 7 furlongs a week later, the crowd just avoids him like a plague, and they take off and they run wire to wire at a $67 horse at Hollywood Park last summer called Electric Energy, who had run third, beaten 7 or 8 lengths, taken its field into the stretch and then just collapsed, and then at 7 furlongs, no early speed, and they've got that nice, easy first 4, and then they start to accelerate on the turn, and then they're just life and death to catch them, and they never do.
Okay, this translated what Tom said is what we put in the manual. You said, and it was at Sportsman's Park was the only noticeable track where it was doing, we said there are some tracks where the anomaly exists within the sprint distance. And I'm sure it probably exists within the route somewhere too, but mostly most noticeable within the sprint, where instead of penalizing, if you're going to give a sprint adjustment, I'm sure Tom's ready to take care of this, but make sure you're paying attention. Instead of being penalized for going longer, at our Southern California tracks, I don't know about Del Mar, but I do know about Santa Ana Mar, but instead of penalizing for going longer, you credit them when they go longer, and that takes care of it. And you penalize them for going shorter. Because the total energy out here at 7, is that true on your variance thing too? The total energy is higher at 7, 6.5, but it's
a little bit more.
Well, there's an anomaly there, but if you do the total energy, take some thing out of your form. Just look at them and run the total energy on 7 and run the total energy on 6. Right now at Santa Anita.
Then this would kind of indicate that something I'm doing might not be a great idea. I get a horse that's failed at 6.5, but he's doing good at the stretch ball, and I've been taking the interior of getting the time and using the 6 furlong race when he's going shorter.
Is it working?
Well, I haven't run out, I haven't, you know.
You don't have enough of a sample.
When deceleration is standard,
that out by itself.
When deceleration is standard, that's very good practice. But when you have a track that is running, and this depends, you know, on what is really, what I've noticed right now, this track, that the energy at 6.5 and 7 is greater than 6, the total energy. And as he says, they 6 furlong horses who fail to get in gear and do what they're supposed to do at 6 will succeed the longer the half furlong or a furlong longer. Now that's maybe has to do with the class level which I play or what?
What it also has to do with, and probably more so than anything else, is that at 7 furlongs, the riders are attempting to rate a lot of those horses. And they let that horse get that lead. It's 7-7, where at 6.5, they all go as fast as they can. And at 7, you can see it. That's why so often you see a 22 2/4, even though it's straight, the same as the 6 furlong. But then you see an acceleration from there on, because that's when they really start running. Well, in the meantime, they've let that front runner get away with the 22 2, and now when they start accelerating, he's accelerating beyond them. And that's why a lot of horses that don't do well at 6 will do all right at 7, because everybody's ready to take the hold of their horse.
Just check your total energy, use your bearing program, check it out. And if you're finding that in the races you're playing, the past performance lines indicate to you that 7, 6.5, has a higher total energy figure than 6, then it stands to reason that to penalize a horse for going longer would be an error, or to credit a horse for going shorter would compound the felony. If you gave that 7 furlong, has already got a higher figure, a greater figure by adjusting it upward when it's going back, you just compound the felony. So plot them yourself. See if your reality, tomorrow's reality, is the same as my reality from the last few weeks. That's your answer. Okay, Dick Schmidt will wind things up here with some insights of his own. It's amazing that, and it's a great tribute to his modesty and to his shyness that he has remained silent this entire day. I think we owe him a tribute of listening to whatever trivia he might bring up.
Yesterday he said, "Now listen, you should all be inspired by Dick Schmidt. If someone who looks like that can do it, you can all do it." Below average intelligence.
That's what he should say. Here we have someone with a below average intelligence making a living at the racetrack. You can all do it.
Yeah, I can.
That's what he said.
Because the doc figures his intelligence is the average.
I don't know. But did you want me to go over the tangent?
Well. How many of you are still using and clearly using the tandem race contract?
Keep going. Don't do it.
Okay, well, let me make a couple general comments, and then anyone who thinks they understand the tandem very well can leave, and I'll cancel the subscription. No, I'll just cry a few little tears.
No, it is.
Basically, I just wanted to say that if I attend all of these sessions out here. I don't think I've missed one yet. But even if I didn't, I'd know what they were about simply because of the phone calls that I get during the month. If we talk a lot about energy out here, I'll start getting calls. Well, the energy is doing this and that and the other thing. And the whole thrust of so many people's handicapping will be suddenly become energy. And they just the energy has to work for them, and that's the only thing they're handicapping with. Next week, we'll talk about synergism. And boy, I'll start getting all these synergism calls. A little forgotten energy. Don't get too carried away with horses to watch. If you're starting to pull two,
there goes 2 days worth of work.
If you're starting to pull 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 horses to watch every day, they're not going to work for you. You really don't have that many. Your horses to watch list should be genuinely outstanding horses. Not, this horse ran a half length faster than far, I'll put him on. I keep them all on 3x5 cards, just sort of keep them in alphabetical order and look them up. And if you find that you have a stack of cards like this, you have too many. If you find you're finding 3 or 4 horses to watch coming back in every race, you have too many. So just remember that you have in your possession the single most powerful handicapping tool ever devised by man. You have it. It's yours. And it takes precedence over everything else. if you have a horse that's on the horses to watch list and you think, aha, here's a horse that had trouble early in the day, he'll do better, and he's in against some horses that are really have superior pace figures, believe your pace numbers. Don't listen to that crappy horse that's a wide stuff. Remember that the horses to watch are exceptions, and that you should make them exceptions. Don't try to put on six horses a day, seven horses a day. There's just not that many horses to watch. It's like the people who get carried away with trip handicapping. And they'll find two or three bad trips in every race. There are two or three bad trips in every race, perhaps. Some of those horses are going to keep on having them time after time after time. You can pick out of the racing form, and our programs will show it to you. You don't need to spend that, don't get too hung up on this particular aspect. Yes?
Do you think it would make sense to have a separate bank for the horses to watch scenario?
Probably, if you're going to do it live, yeah.
No matter what he says.
it would depend on how you're going to use it. If you're going to use it as a, here's a horse to watch, make a bet?
No.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. If you're going to try to meld it into your other play, it's going to be kind of difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But sure, a separate bank, particularly if you're making your own horse to watch list. I do have a separate bank for horses to watch, because I use Tom's horses to watch. So, I just don't play regularly enough right now to generate a horses to watch list. Now, I see a horse, oh, this horse looks great, and he runs back four times before I get out to the track again. Or, you have to be very regular to use a horse to watch list out there, because you know, if you only go on the weekends, well, they're going to run the damn horse back on Thursdays. I mean, you're going to miss it that way. It helps if you can go every day. But sure, a separate bankroll is never a bad idea. You particularly to test anything. And then if you look down, you see, I'm getting a very nice return on a separate on the separate bankroll, you might want to just include it with your main play. That would be up to you. But I think it would depend on if you're only playing, let's say, horses to watch when they're in the top two factor W, or the top two factor you think you're winning, then you're not really playing horses to watch anyway. But I would urge you to not forget who, don't forget to dance with the one who brung you. The methodology is so powerful, you can win out there without horses to watch. But without the methodology, you're really in trouble. Just keep that in mind. That was the only point I wanted to make, because I hear this time after time, whatever topic we cover out here, everyone tends to kind of go overboard. And a lot of the people who don't manage to they talk to their friends, and they say, oh, well, listen, they said energy is just a key. You got to have the right energy. And the same people will call me up and say, gee, the horse has 4 points too high energy, and I just don't understand it. Well, that's the way it is that day. Okay, I just wanted to make that point. The other thing about horses to watch, and this is a horses to watch situation that you can kind of pull right out of the past performances, and you can do it if you haven't been to the races for a year, is the tandem concept. And basically, the reason the tandem is effective is because the average handicap is counterintuitive to the average handicapper. The average handicapper says A beat B last time, A is going to beat B again. Our research says that they only win between 8 and 12%. But when horses tend to run back, they take turns beating each other, is what happens. Less at the very high classes, more at the very low classes. But for the vast majority of races, this holds up very well. Now, does everyone in here understand what a tandem is? Two or more horses coming out of the same race. From my opinion...
All right, when we talk tandem races now, I think you're going to get right into it, but I'm in Vegas, and I look here, and here's a tandem horse, a tandem horse, a tandem horse, but maybe there's four lengths separating one, and then there's two lengths separating
one. We're going to define a tandem for you right now. They're coming out of the same race, and they are, from my point within 4.5 lengths of the best horse in the race.
Not in the last race?
A last race, or if one of them has run back, I'll go back. But if they show 2 or 3 races, I forget the count. I don't go back more than 1 or 2 races anyway. So
I just change it to from the same pace race.
Pace race you're using.
Now Howard has a little more liberal interpretation. He says any horse that figures to finish first, second, third, or fourth, or finish within 4 3/4 length. I personally insist on the 4 3/4 length. I don't care if they finish second, beaten by 6, I do not consider that a 10. He does. And he invented it, so you may do as you wish.
His is for the average guy, one take a rule, his is much better. Keep it within the 4.5 lengths. Main reason I put in first, second, third, or fourth is so people could automatically spot by position call if that was to key them to it.
The other thing is, I think the first, second, third is better in other parts of the country.
Yeah.
Out here, when you have a horse beaten by 6, don't forget, you're predicting a turnaround. You're predicting that the winner will decline and that second place horse will improve. 6 is an awful lot to ask the horse to improve. So if the winner just runs back, it's the same race. He's not likely to improve 6. You know, the second horse is not likely to improve 6 lengths.
If the best horse in the tandem ran third by 5 lengths,
and the next horse, then you take anything that's within 9 3/4 lengths. Sure. Now, don't forget, the fact that it's a tandem does not make them necessarily contender.
Here's the line.
That horse that was beaten by 5 has to be a contender. And then I'll use every other horse out of the tandem automatically as a contender. I don't care if they're number 9 on the class figure. I don't care what it is. Tandem takes precedence over everything else. Those horses always go in. Now you may have to toss some out later, but I always take the horse as a tandem race. Now there's 2 ways you can handle tandems. The tandem manual was built around the first one, and if you want detailed information on this, you should get the tandem manual. I'm only going to take 5 minutes to cover this whole concept. Basically, it says go back and get a better race for the horse. The tandem race proves that the horse is in shape. You've made the horse, the winning horse out of that tandem, a contender. Therefore, all the other horses qualifying the tandem rules are contenders, and go back and get a better race form. The problem that arises from that is sometimes you wind up going out of the same form cycle. Sometimes there's not a better race. Maybe the tandem race was the only route showing. Maybe the tandem, maybe the horse is coming off a 4-month layoff. There's a lot of different reasons why going back doesn't always work. So, everyone read this?
This is the key. A lot of people forget that there are other horses in the race and they think that it's going to be one.
Your tandem winner is the one that when you zero in, your tandem winner and or best finisher, in other words, if the winner is not in there and the second and third horse places are, those are the ones. Take the one that finished best, but make sure his total energy makes him a contender. Make sure you make that best finisher a contender. If not, that's great, too. You can throw out the whole tandem. Bang, 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 bang. Sometimes you can throw out 5 horses all in one fell swoop. It all goes at once. The other, the alternate tandem is something that Howard and Jim Bradshaw came up with, and that is giving every horse in the race the beaten lengths of the best finisher. I always think that sounds very clear, but I'll write it over here. I'm not going to put the times up, but you have a horse that finished running 4 by 3, 2 by 2, rather with that one, and wins the race. Now, coming out of the same race, you have a horse that was 3 by 3, 2 by 1, and 2, beaten 2 lengths. You enter this exactly as you see it. This Don't change these first two columns and give it a zero here. Alternate tandem. Now you want to be a little careful with this, because the one thing it will totally upset is the horse's energy pattern. The early energy will be different. What I do when I do this is I'll go back on this horse and run five or six lines real quick through the variant program and just kind of get a feel for the horse's usual early energy. And if he's in the ballpark, then I just don't worry about it. Early energy is going to be thrown off. On the other hand, going back may also throw off early energy. Whenever you do something artificial, you're playing with reality here. And either one of these are very artificial things to do to a horse. But it works, so. And because of the fact that the crowd looks at this horse beating this horse, says, he's going to do it again today. The Rams beat the Bears beat the Cowboys, therefore the Rams can beat the Cowboys. It doesn't work too well in football, and it doesn't work hardly at all in horse racing. These horses are very likely to flip-flop. And there's a number of real good reasons why. They're all detailed in the tandem manual. I'm not going to go into that. Why? This is just the how. Any questions on this alternate method? And you're going to have to kind of grow an instinct for which time to do it one way and which time to do it the other. Sometimes one's better, sometimes the other's better. I mix and match sort of as I feel which one will give me a more accurate picture of the of the horse.
Actually, sometimes it works to your advantage that the energy is shifted.
Sometimes.
One thing, you want the energy to shift. Let's say this is an early pace track. And this is the winner, the tandem. This is where they only win, repeat, 8% or less of the time. When they are contrary to today's early energy bias. He won against this horse as a presser. This horse was leading and got caught. This is a dynamite if it's an early pace track. Contrary-wise, it's a sustained pace track, and this horse had won. This horse was second by two. This is a dynamite tandem.
The thing that's been bothering me, Howard, I've been doing that for some time, but the thing that bothers me about it is that you're moving the horse up very suddenly, and you're doing it all at the end of the race. What if the horse's style changes by placing itself early, closer up early in the race?
Well, what he did in that tandem race, except for finishing, was right for today's bias, he's much more likely to win. That's what this says. If you change this around, you might as well go with the race as it is.
If you're not comfortable doing this, go back and get another line. If you're not comfortable with that, do a Bob Purdy.
Well, I've been doing it with moderate success. It's just there's been something nagging at me that the horse isn't going to do it exactly this way. It's not going to leap over right here.
Counterintuitive things tend to pay better than the things that everyone can see.
Yeah. Brohammer, however, made it agility. He said this makes perfect sense to him. He says, what the heck, this is my experience, is this horse is peaked, and this horse is an improving horse. And he's going to improve off this race, and the tandem concept allows for his improvement. It doesn't hurt this horse. You still make him the winner, putting his line in. But it helps the improving horse, and his experience says it is highly logical if you want to twist things around. Isn't that what you said one day? I was so flattered when you said that.
It does make sense, yeah. As long as you haven't got a regressor.
And just make sure you insist. That's one of the reasons I like doing this. That's one of the reasons I insist on 4 3/4, or more likely 4.5. 4 probably in the sprint, 4 3/4. I really want them up close.
One thing that's in the tandem manual that should be brought out too, that really helps, is the horse that loses because of one running style, the trainer may tell the jockey to change the running style slightly.
I'm not going to try to get into why it works. That's one of the reasons why it works. Because they give different instructions, they change their training patterns. And the guy that won tends to say, well, I won last time, I'll
leave it alone.
There's a lot of different reasons why it works. And if you really want to go into it, you want to start betting with it, I advise you buy the book. But this is a way to sort of dredge your horse for one right out of the race without having looked at a chart, without having looked at anything. And that's why we wanted to bring it up in today's session.
Ratshaw uses it almost to the exclusion of all things. It's much more tandem racing at the Midwest Circuit. And he makes a fortune with it.
It's a nice spot play method if you're looking for it.
Yeah, it really is. That's particularly if you look at, find the tracks that are kind of at the end of the line, right here. You'll see more tandems in Southern California than you will, say, in New York. Aksarvin is notorious for it. There you'll see normally four or five horses in every race coming out of the same race because they have a local horse colony and they don't ship. Southern California does not ship very much. We don't get a lot of shippers in or out compared to in Philadelphia or New York. It's not nearly as valuable because there it's kind of unusual. If you look for it, you're going to play in Las Vegas or something at a track that you don't see a lot of shippers.
Great spot play in Vegas.
It's a wonderful spot play. It's very quick, and you just have to kind of be aligned to it. And
get drunk the night before, and you're real hungover, and you're tired, and everything. You stand in the
there you go. That's what I do when I get drunk the night. I just pound down those keys.
I emphasize this line for a tandem race with a winner in it. This is getting a little more esoteric when you go place to third, to show to fourth and things. But when you got along with a winner in it, it really is dynamite.
You apply it to maidens. My husband and I have argued about this. I do, he doesn't.
Well, I have never played a maiden race in my life that I would admit.
Dick Schmidt, do you play?
The entire start methodology says that maidens, one of the flaws in maidens is that they do not lend themselves very well to pace analysis, period. If you want to do maidens, start doing trainer studies, start doing other things. This whole methodology is built on history repeating itself. Horses forming a pattern and running back to that pattern. And the horses may go up and down in form cycles, but they have a pattern. And you look at the past to predict the future. That doesn't work very well with me. It was more Paul was first time starters. And the maidens are notorious for getting beaten 23 lengths in one race and then coming back and turning in a very good effort. It happens all the time. You can take any maiden race, flip it open, and just run your eye down there, and you'll see horses that beaten 23rd, 23rd, finished second, beaten 23rd, or maybe go on to be world beaters.
Let me give you a little something James Quinn taught me. I know you've sat at his feet, and I've sat at his feet also. What he told me was this, that maidens cluster toward each other and are scared to move. One of them suddenly one day gets brave, and he wins, and now he's a whole different, or it's a whole different person. So I remember.